So, the Bhagavad Gita takes place in the middle of the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is a huge, like 18-volume epic of the Mahabharata war. And right in the very middle of the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue between Lord Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna, who is a kshatriya and head of kind of the main figures of the Pandava clan. I won't go and tell the whole Mahabharata story, but let me just tell this. Krishna, who is the Lord, who is an avatar, was, from Arjuna's point of view, was just a really good friend. He knew that Krishna was an avatar. He knew he was very special. But his relationship with him was a really good friend and mentor. So he never asked Krishna for self-knowledge. It's like you're having the Lord here, but you don't really care about self-knowledge or what's really happening. He cared about what was going on in the world and what his needs were and with the, you know, how to be a good person in the world and all that. So he would always go to Krishna for guidance and for military guidance and all of this type of stuff. But when it came time, due to a conflict between Dharma and Adharma, that Arjuna had to lead his people into war, what he found was, when he was standing there, you know, they had all the rules of war. They were standing, the two sides were standing in formation. Arjuna and all of his army on the one side, and Duryodhana, who was the kind of antagonist, on the other side, and all of his army. When Arjuna looked over at the other side, he saw so many of family members, uncles, and aunts and uncles, and so many. People that were so very dear to him, also many of his teachers, his acharyas that he had studied with, who for one reason or another dharmically had to be on the other side. And then he saw all of his family and people on his side, and he realized that everybody is going to be destroyed by this war. And I am actually going to be killing the people that I love, that are so important to me. Why? So he's realizing all of this, and he starts telling all of this to Krishna. How can I do this? How can I fight? And he had Krishna actually bring him out to the middle of the two lines, middle of the battlefield, and he was just looking around saying, this is impossible. How can I do this? I would rather go to the mountains and take sannyasa, you know, just live a simple life rather than enjoy a kingdom that's dripping in the blood of the people whom I love. And he said, I can't do it. And he sat down in the chariot, just become quiet, you know, can't do this. And then Krishna tried to give him a pep talk. You're a kshatriya. This is your responsibility, is to uphold the dharma. And the dharma is being severely damaged at this point. And so Krishna gave him a pep talk. But then Arjuna said, he said to Krishna, I surrender to you. Please teach me. You know, please teach me what is true. Please give me this knowledge. He became a mumukshu. He became somebody desirous of liberation. Because it took this very severe, very serious situation for him to realize that there is no way to win. Now, I'm in a situation where no matter what is done, what happens, I cannot be happy. It's just, there is no way out of this, you know. There must be something that is beyond dharma and adharma. There is a truth. I need to know that now, you know. And because in India they all know. There is the Vedas, there is the Vedanta, there is something to know. But they also all know, and when I'm ready for that, I'll go and get it. But right now, I need to do this, and I need to do that. So Arjuna was always, I need to do this, and I have these responsibilities, and I want to accomplish this, and I want to accomplish that. But he got pushed into this corner where he realized that no accomplishment at this point is good. There's no way out. And at that time, then he looks at Krishna differently. Krishna, you know the truth. You know what is going on. You know, please save me. Please give me knowledge. And so Krishna, it says in the Gita, Krishna got this little smile on his face. That, okay, finally. He's finally realized, you know, there's nothing to be known here. So got the little smile. And then he agreed. And then he started from verse 11, teaching Arjuna. And so we're picking up in verse 20 where he's unfolding the nature of the self, because one of Arjuna's main arguments with all these people that I love so much, you know, they're all going to be slain. I'm going to kill them, you know, and I'm going to cause other people to. I'm not only going to kill, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, I'm also making other people kill hundreds and hundreds of people. So all of these people that are dear to me, I'm going to be destroying. I've become the destroyer, and I'm making other people destroy also. You know, and so Krishna starts out teaching, saying, you're speaking words of wisdom, you know, even though you're speaking the words of the wise, and at the same time, you're grieving for what doesn't deserve any grief. You're speaking like a wise person because he's also giving Krishna a lecture on Dharma and how this is not something that can be done and the whole Dharma will fall. And he's really giving him telling Krishna how it's going to be. And he says, oh, you're speaking a lot of words of wisdom here, but at the same time you're grieving for something that doesn't deserve any grief. You know. Then he said the wise people, the pundits, those people who know, who have self-knowledge, they don't grieve for the living or the dead. He starts like that. And then he starts to unfold the whole Vedanta from there. The chapter 2 that we're working on right now is really a synopsis of everything in the whole Gita. And so it's like that's often how we teach. We'll give the whole vision, and then it'll be broken into the full 18 chapters of the Gita. The first six chapters of the Gita really unfold the vision from the standpoint of the Atma, yourself, the truth of your nature. The second six chapters unfold the nature of Ishwara, of the Lord. And the last six chapters really concentrate. Everything is in each one section, but there's concentration, you know, emphasis. In the last six, focuses on the identity between the individual self and the self of Ishwara. So that's kind of the structure of the Gita. So now we're in chapter 2. So chapter 2, verse 20. It's a big verse, but it's also a verse that kind of bring us up to speed. So, just repeat after me. Anybody have verse 20? Najayate mriyate vakadachat. Najayate mriyate vakadachat. Napi bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha. Nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam puranaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam puranaha. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Najayate, najayate, mriyate, sandhi, najayate, mriyate, va, kadachit. Is everybody with me?
No?
Okay, verse 20. Chapter 2, verse 20. I'll give you a chance to find it.
There are numbers here, there's little numbers here, and the 2 is chapter 2, and the 20 is...
What page is it on?
That's
page 4.
Page 4? I mean, in our, you don't have page numbers, but it's the fourth page.
Okay. We're going to get kind of a better version of this, but this will do for now. So. Everybody see it? Is there transliteration?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you find it in Najayate?
Yeah.
Let's do it, Aiden. You do it this time, so you have a nice voice. Vijayate.
Vijayate mriyate va kadachite.
Najayate mriyate va kadachite.
Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha.
Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha.
Ajo nitya shashvato yam puranaha.
Ajo nitya shashvato yam puranaha.
Nahanyate hanyamane sharire.
Nahanyate hanyamane sharire.
So I'm going to break the sandhi. Najayate mriyate. No, you don't have to repeat, just follow. Najayate. No, don't repeat. Don't repeat. Okay. Just follow along. So for those who know some Sanskrit, you can see the sandhi being broken, okay? If you don't know Sanskrit, it doesn't really matter, but you'll kind of get the hang of it, I think. It's good exposure for when you all do learn Sanskrit in the future. Najayate mriyate va kadachit na ayam bhutva bhavita va nabhuyaha ajo nitya ajaha nityaha shashvataha ayam puranaha na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So this verse we did, it's a big verse, and it also nicely leads into the next verses, so I wanted to repeat it. So Krishna says to Arjuna, who's so worried about slaying all of the people he loves or causing people to slay, to kill them, he goes, Najayate mriyate va kadachit. Na kadachit means never, never at any time. Jayate mriyate va. So the Atma, the self, is never at any time born, nor does it die. Jayate means born. Najayate, it is not born. The self is not born, nor does it die. Na mriyate va. Then it says, Na ayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Na ayam. It's not that. Na ayam, but this Atma, it's not that. It having been abhavita, having been nabhavita, it will not be. So something is now, but then it dies. It's come into being, but then it dies. It's not that yourself is here now and later will die. Okay? Nabhavita. It will not die. So then he says, nor again the opposite. It's not that having not been, it will come into being. Right? It's not that being here it will die, or having not been, it will be born. Yourself is never born and it never dies. It's not that having been it will die, or having not been it will be born. It says the self, the ayam, this Atma is ajaha, it's free from birth, it's nityaha, means free from time. It's shashvataha, unchanging in between, shashvataha. It's puranaha, it's ever new. And this self, which is ajaha, nityaha, shashvataha, ayam puranaha, it nahanyate, it is never killed, nahanyate, it isn't killed, hanyamane sharire, when this body is killed. When this body is killed, this Atma, the self, is never killed. Okay, so that's the verse. There's a lot in this verse. First of all, there's something that we call the Shuddh Bhava Vikaras. The Shuddh Bhava Vikaras are the modifications that any living entity goes through. So they have six of them. It says, first you're born, it's called Jayate. So you take a birth, you're born. Asti. Now that you're born, you exist. Here you are. So it's Jayate, you're born. Asti, you are here. Then being here, Vardhate, you grow. Right? Then growing, when especially for humans, you go through like a puberty transformation, you know, called vivardite. You go through transformation. But then, you've been growing, you go through your metamorphosis into an adult, you know. And then you go on for some time, and then apakshiyate, you start to decay, right? You start to grow old and decay. In fact, that decay starts in your 20s, they say. You get up to your 20s, and then it's a downhill slope. downhill slope from there. It's a slow downhill decline. And then vinashati, you die. Okay. These are the six. These are the shad bhava vikara. Vikara means a modification, right? Shad is six. So the six modifications of bhava, of coming into being, it goes through. So you're born, you exist, you go through modification through puberty, and then you are a full-grown person, and then from that point on, it's a slow apakshiyate, you decline, and then you die. This is what happens to all beings. And so in this verse, he said, there are no shed bhava vikaras. These modifications do not exist for the atma. And you start with the first two, the jayate, being born, and vinashyati, dying. Once these two are negated, you say for your being, for the atma, for yourself, there is no birth and there is no death, then these four in-between modifications are not going to be there. But nevertheless, we go through every single one of them. You know, we have words for every one of them. So for you, there's no coming into being, there's no going out of being, and in the middle, there's no modification. So basically, what it says that this verse is saying is that yourself, the self who you are, you know, is something which is timeless, free from time. There is no coming into being, and there's no going out of being. There is no time. So to understand, I mean, we have to show you how this is the fact of it. But just to understand what they mean by these words. First of all, if we say something is nitya or ajaha, unborn, there's no coming into being. But that's not to say that you are not. Right? It's just that you have not come into being. So the being that you are is free from time. So what does that mean in terms of now the self-discovery that we have to, the whole Upanishad is unfolding for you, is that the self that you are right now is the self that you have always been. The very being, the conscious being, the me. That's what we label. I say me because we label it as me. We don't say, I am the conscious being. But if you say, I am the conscious being, you know, who, knock, knock, who's there? The conscious being. We don't say that, you know. That's too intellectual. We say me, I'm here, right? So now the things, that's who we're talking about, this I, the one who's here, the me. This I that you are, that you identify as me, yourself, is free of time. That means this me, if you were to go back, except when we start really looking at, you know, taking body after body after body, reincarnation, say you go back a million lifetimes from now, the self that is here as the me, the I, that is as though indwelling this body, is the very self that is there a million years ago, a billion years ago, many, many cycles of creation ago, because free from time. And similarly, this very me that is here right now, if I were to go millions and billions of years ahead from the standpoint of this time that exists within the creation, it is this very me that is here now. There is no time for me. So you can experience that in a way to kind of recognize the truth of that, even in this moment in your life now. You actually never have an experience that is not in the present. You are never not in the present. And so just even experientially, so we have to think of it, look at the experiences, the time, past, present, and future, that is flowing through, I would say flowing through you. Time is flowing through you. But even though we say that your time Like I did this yesterday and last year I did this and 10 minutes ago I did this. So we're very, very aware of time and the experiences that take place in time. But you are never in the past. Right now, your memory of all those experiences are taking place in the present. Like if you say, last year I did such and such, you are recalling a memory which you are present to at this moment, right? You're not going back in time. You're not a time traveler, right? You're just remembering in the present what you did 10 minutes ago or a year ago or when you were little. That's just a memory, but the memory is taking place now. And if you think in the future, I'm going to do this, I'll be doing that, or you're imagining and worrying over the future, having daydreams over the future, that is taking place now, right? So you actually are never out of the now. So one way of understanding that your relationship to time, what if I were to say, you know, I'm always in the present, but the word present is always related to past and future. So you can say, you're always in the present. That is true. But what if you say, I am really the presence of the present. You know, I am the one who is aware of the present. There's a difference. I differentiate myself from time. I am the presence of the present. And past, present, and future, whenever they are taking place, are always taking place in the present. Past from memory, future from projection, right? All of them are happening now, and I am the one who is aware of that now. Right? When we, even when we say now, now has the sense of continuity. There was now, and there was a moment ago and a moment to come. But now we're talking about right now. I'm talking about right now, but I'm really talking about the one who is aware of right now, right? The one who illumines right now. Now, there's another big problem with the word now or the word present, and that is, say the present or this moment, this now, that now can be infinitely divided, you know? Like this present moment, how long did this present moment, like say if I say, okay, there, that's the now, that's now, that now, that's that present moment. But you know, if I could put a marker, I could mark that click into really a countless number of moments. Swamiji used to use the example, Puja Swamiji, if you would use the example of in puja, you know, we take rose, all the rose petals off the roses so that we have a whole pile of petals that then we offer when we do puja. So he just imagined taking those rose petals, which are so, so thin and so delicate, and just lining them up, one, and holding them in your hand like that. You probably have 500 rose petals, right? And you take a needle and you just go, okay, just goes just in less than a second, just goes through all 500, and it goes through them one at a time, you know. So each petal is a moment, and then you could divide. Then you could put a petal in under a microscope and see how wide that petal actually is, and that needle still goes through, you know, one moment at a time as it passes through the petal. So it's actually, we would have to say, as we analyze this world of experience that we have, we actually can't find a moment. Because as long as we're within time, everything that we would call a moment is actually divisible into smaller moments. Because if it takes up time, right, that's linear. That whatever is linear can be divided into smaller moments. And so if it doesn't take up time, then we're out of time, right? But if it takes up time, then it can be divided, so every moment is infinitely divisible. So actually, we have no concept of what a moment is. It's just kind of it's just a theoretical concept or experiential concept. Sometimes even a moment can last forever, or it can go just like that. Use the example of like when you're kind of in a hurry and you're at the bus stop. You're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, you know, for such a long time. It was maybe 10 minutes. It's a really long 10 minutes. And if it's 20 minutes, it's just out of sight. It's a long period of time. But if you're doing with somebody that you love, or you're totally engaged in what you're doing, 10 minutes is like an instant. 20 minutes is too short. The time is very, very relative, you know, and continually changing. So much to just the way you orientate toward yourself toward it. But time is something that you experience. You experience time. You experience change. You know. You experience birth. You experience death. Birth and death are just modifications of change. You experience that. But what about the one who experiences time? I am aware of time. I am aware of change. That means I'm there before, during, and after. If you're aware of it, right, you're the one who's the witness of it. If you're the witness of it, then time is taking place, the flow of time is taking place, and you are the one who's aware of it. So where's time for you? For you, there's no time, right? Because you're aware of time. You see the difference there? So now we have to even understand that concept, we have to actually recognize, okay, I'm aware of time. Yes, I'm aware of time. I'm aware of change. Yes, I'm aware of change. But who is aware of them? Who is that? Who is that one who's aware of time and who's aware of change? Yeah. Just think of it. If I am the one who is aware of time and aware of change, is free of time and change, then for me there is no birth or death. If I'm free of time, if I'm free of change, there's no birth or death for me. Which is that exactly what Krishna's saying. Nor if I'm aware, if what is subject to time and change is something that's objectified by me, then whatever goes on in that world of time and change, I am free of. But how is that possible? How is it possible? Because I can say, I, this body, mind, sense organs, really outlast a lot of things that I'm aware of. And so, of course, I'm free of those things that I am looking at through my sense organs, or I'm free of the things that I'm experiencing, because part of me lasts longer than the thing I'm experiencing. So that doesn't make me free of time. It just means I'm decaying at a slower pace than the things I'm aware of. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about me, myself, actually being free of time, not subject to time, which would mean that this me, the one that I am the constant, and I'm not subject to birth and death or change of any kind. And that is not true about anything you've taken to be yourself. It's not true about your body. Your body is subject to birth and death. It's not true about your sense organs. They'll die with the body, and they're also going through their own process of change and decay within the time span of the body. It's not true of your mind. Your mind, your thoughts, your moods, your emotions, they're continually changing themselves, but they're also instrumental in becoming aware of your sense organs in the body, you know? And so there's different time sequences happening from different parts of yourself. So you can say, well, this is changing at a faster rate than this, and so I can be aware of these changes. So our mind would go through all kinds of things and say, well, it doesn't make any sense, really, that I'm free of time. So we have to see how it's true that, in fact, I can recognize the one, myself, that cannot be objectified. But ultimately, you, if it's you, the conscious being, you cannot become an object to yourself, right? Just in our own experience, I can say, well, all these things that are objectified, they have their own time sequence, so to speak, and I'm aware of them. But the one who's aware of them also, right, is subject to time. And then the one who is aware of that, as we'll see, is also subject to time. And so it's not necessarily true that the one who is aware of something is itself free from time. But then we have to understand that yourself, ultimately, the one who is ultimately aware, either that's yourself or you're aware of that too. Right? If you're aware of it, then what you had taken to be yourself is an object, not you. If you get down, if you get to the kind of the innermost self, then that self you can't be aware of as an object, you know, or who are you? You're going to be the one who's aware of that. So that can go into like an infinite regress. So we have to see in our experience who we really are in terms of ultimately me. Ultimately me is the one, me, the I, that is ever present to all of my experiences, but unlike all of my experiences, can't be objectified into an object. Like, for instance, let's just look at this. I just want you to kind of experience this. In terms of all of you, everything external to my body, I would say, okay, I am me, the subject, and you are all, and the walls and everything, you are all the object. So this is the subject, this is the object. I am aware of you. Of course, you're aware of me too, but we're doing it from each of our individual perspectives. So that is our experience. Everyone has this experience. We take it for granted. I am me, and everything else is not me. Subject, object. And I am aware of you and all of the changes that you're going through. I'm outlasting those changes. You can come into the room and go out of the room, and I'm still here. Right? So I am, my being is not dependent upon you, because there's a difference between me and you, you see? I'm just putting into words what we just take for granted, actually. But I am also aware of my physical body, right? And this body, which I'm aware of all of your bodies, but through my sense organs, but I'm also aware of this, my own body, right? And I'm aware of my own body with the same sense organs that I'm aware of your body with. So this body, even though it is me, I take it to be myself, on analysis, I'm aware of it, like we did in the meditation this morning. I'm aware of it as an object. I know how it's feeling, etc., right? So this might seem obvious to you, but it does get pretty intense when we really recognize that this body is known to me because of my sense organs. If you get rid of your sense organs one by one, you not only get rid of this world, you have no perception of this world, you have no perception of your body. Your body is known to you because you can see it, because you can touch it, you can feel it, you can hear it, you can taste it. That's how you know this body. If you got rid of the sense organs one by one, you have no body as far as you're concerned. You have a mind that is illumining sense organs that don't work, and there's no perception. Right? And so there is no body for you, no experience, the body. I've told the story of my paraplegic friend who could not believe that he couldn't feel his body, so he made me stick pins in his leg just to see if that was for real, and he shut his eyes, and I said, really? He said, okay, we'll try. So he had a pin, and I stuck it just gently, tapped his leg, and he couldn't feel it at all. I had no idea, and it really freaked him out. So okay, no, forget it, because he could compensate for that through his vision. You know, he could see his body. So even though he had no perception of it, still his mind kind of made it as though he could feel it, but he couldn't feel it at all. Just imagine you get rid of all of your sense organs; there is no body in your experience. You're there, but there you have no body. So we could say, really yourself, then, the real identification is with your sense organs, which is aware of the world in your body. But then you realize, are you aware of your sense organs? And of course you are. You know, if they're working or they're not working, you know. And also you're not dependent on them for yourself. You're dependent on your eyes for seeing, but if you lose your eyes, knock on wood, we don't want that, you know, you're still very much there. You just, one instrument is gone. If you lose your hearing, you're there. An instrument is gone. And so what that instrument provides for you is not available to you, but you are there. Right? So the sense organs are actually instruments that my mind uses for me to experience the world and this body, to have the experience, the experiences that come and go, you know. But I don't come and go. The experiences go on changing, and the experiences are given to me by these instruments, my body, and then my sense organs, right? And then I'm aware of my sense organs through my mind. My sense organs are just instruments that sometimes I use and sometimes I don't. Like, you have your ears and eyes right here. You might be daydreaming right now, in which case you're not hearing me. So, right, you're not hearing me. If you're daydreaming, you're off in your daydream. Right? You have the sense organs, you're not using them. So if you're off in your daydream, you're still here. You still are. But you're just not using your sense organs to really be participating in this physical world. You're participating in your daydream or in your imagination or your, you know, nodding out. So daydream, these instruments give me, or they're useful for giving me experiences, but those experiences that, but the mind is using the sense organs or not. If the mind is using the sense organs, then you hear and see, etc. So I am my mind, I can say. But my mind also I'm aware of. You're aware of how you're feeling. You're aware of your emotional state. You're aware of your memories. You're aware of what you're thinking. You're even aware of the I thought, like I am thinking, you know, or I am upset, or I am happy. You know, or I am tired, you're identifying with the body, that even that I thought, you're aware of. So we do meditation. I said sometimes I'll say, just relax and watch your mind. Just be aware of your mind. Okay? Welcome every thought that you have. Just say, okay, no problem. Because every thought that I have, every emotion is something which is known to me. It provides experiences for me. Right? But I am the subject who illumines those experiences, and those experiences are always coming and going, right? That's something extraordinary to understand about your mind. You can say, this little piece of logic that we use, you can say, when this thought is, I am, right? When the next thought is, I still am. Right? Every thought you have negates. It's a negation of the prior thought. But I still am. Every emotion, I still am. Every experience, I still am. The experiences go on changing and changing and changing, but I still am. So now that one, we're getting closer and closer to the subject, to the me that is always there. Whether the experience is given to me by the world, through my sense organs, I am there. Next experience, I still am. Whether it's just given, I'm tuned into my sense organs, I still am. I'm aware of my eyes or the condition of my eyes, the condition of my sense organs, I still am. As all of these experiences go on changing. Every thought I have, I still am. Right? So if I still am, as all of these experiences come and go, how is it that I take myself to be that? How do I take myself to be an experience that comes and goes? That's a good question. That's what Shankara said in the Adhyasabhasha of the Brahma Sutras. How is it possible that I am the one who is stable and ever present, but I'm always only taking myself to be, you know, the experience that I'm having? And it's because the all experiences that you're having are taking place in your mind, whether the sense organs are giving a thought modification for your mind, you know, or your mind is having its own experiences in terms of emotions and imaginations and the I thought and memories and whatnot. All of those experiences that you have, without exception, all enjoy yourself, all take place in me, in this conscious being. But the experiences that you're having go on changing, changing, changing. So from the standpoint of your mind, what does it think? You know, I'm always changing. That's what it thinks. Because the mind never is without me. So the mind thinks, I am always changing, or I am moody, or I am happy, or I am sad. Or if it's identified with the body, I am sleepy, or I am tired, or whatever. If all of these experiences are continually changing, so the mind just says, I am always changing. Because that's its experience. It never experiences something like, oh gee, I'm not enjoying consciousness right now. Yeah. Oh, I'm not having any existence right now. It never has that. That experience, so it just says, I am the conscious being. This me, if it's talking like a kind of theoretically, I, this the mind, this person that I am, this soul, this body, mind, sense organs, comes, I am a conscious being. Because when isn't it a conscious being? As long as it's there, it's conscious being. Right? So it's correct in its ignorance. You know? So what we need to do is, wait a minute, recognize, wait a minute, there's a subject-object differentiation here, and that everything in my experience that I've taken to be me, right, is actually belongs to the world. You know, it belongs to the world. It's objectified along with the rest of the world. And yes, it all exists within time. It's all coming into being and going out of being. As is everything. It's coming into being and going out of being. Everything's subject to time, subject to change. But what about me, the one who I cannot objectify? So if you can objectify, you're just taking yourself to be that. Incorrectly, actually. You're taking yourself to that is you. You know? But all of those experiences come and go. You don't come and go, so that can't be you. And so, let me objectify myself then. Let me keep on with this objectification. And so you try. You objectify every experience that you have on every level, emotional level, and all of your agnanam. I'm aware I don't know this, and I don't know this, and I don't know this. You objectify all of your relationships. You know, this is my partner, and this is my child, and these are my friends, and these are my flowers. Okay, everything. You objectify everything. They're objectified. Now try to objectify the me. You can say, well, the I thought. I am doing this, I am doing that. I, me, 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 me. I can objectify the word, right? That's true. But now, all of those things that are objectified, who is the self, the me, that's doing the subject, ultimately? Called pratyagatma, the most innermost me. Can that be objectified? If it can, we still have some work to do. Who is the one objectifying? So when you get just to your own presence, your own self, there's no way to objectify yourself to become an object within time and space. How is that possible? For you, if you cannot be objectified and differentiated, where is there time? Where is there space? You're not an object. And so that's that self, that me that we're talking about, the one that you can't make into an object. That one is the one who's free of birth and death, who is free of change. Because to be subject to change, you have to be an object within time and space. You know, otherwise, how are you subject? If you're aware of time, say, you're aware of change, you're aware of time, how can you be the change that you're aware of? It's not possible, because you would have changed, right? The thing that's changing has already, that last moment is gone. There's no one there to be aware of it. It's gone. You know? So who's the one that's not gone? That illumines, that is the self, the conscious being. If that was gone too, you're gone. You're not here. But that's not true. I am the one who, no matter what the experience is, I am the one who is the constant that can be in relationship to every one of those experiences. That's my mind is the one that's talking. I'm not talking. My mind is saying, you know, the one who is here now was the one who is the little girl, you know. The one who is happy now is the one that was sad yesterday, you know. The one who weighed 200 pounds finally lost some weight. All of that. There's always, it's called a pratyabhijna, there's always this relationship of my own presence to every experience that I have. So if you were bound by time, then you're gone as every change that takes place. Say that ultimately, the pratyagatma, the innermost self, itself was bound by time. Then you're dead every moment. In fact, you can't get to a moment, so you never experience yourself because it's infinitely divisible. And that isn't your experience. Your experience is of utter constancy. That's why otherwise you'd be scared to death, because change is formidable. You know, everything on every level of time even is continually destroying itself. Everything is coming and going faster than you can even imagine. And if you had anything to do with that, you wouldn't be able to find yourself. It's not possible. There's no person for whom all of this takes place. And ultimately, for there to be a person who is present, who is the me in which all of this takes place, that me ultimately has to be free from time. Do you see that? It's a very beautiful thing. And your experience also, even though we don't talk about it like that, your experience is also yourself as free from time, because you're never not here. You know, you are the self of every single experience. You are not dismissed. Right? Every experience you have is quickly dismissed. It's quickly replaced, without exception. In that way, there's no slow experiences. Yeah. Every experience is completely replaced, continually. You know, are you being replaced? Well, my thoughts are being replaced. My emotions are being replaced. True. But are you being replaced? Because if you're being replaced, then the one who's replaced you, you know, is having the experience, not you, because you're gone. You're gone, you know. So just think about it. Even now, even to try to find a moment here, we can't find it because it's kind of infinitely divisible. So now imagine if you were one of those moments. You wouldn't even have time to, you wouldn't even have time to blink, and you'd be gone. So this, the one who is the you that is ever present, free of change, is the one we're talking about. We're not talking about the body or the sense organs. The inner knowers, like the sense organs, know this body, so we mean the sense organs. No, because the sense organs themselves are objectified. So what, we mean the mind? No, the mind itself is objectified. All of these things are continually changing. They're all subject to birth and death. They come into being and they go out of being. You don't. So this is the self that in this verse Krishna is saying, you know, you are never born and you never die. You know? And it's not that you were never born, right? That not that you were born, but you will come to an end. It's not that either. And it's not that you were not born and you will be born. No. For you are free of any type of birth and death. And how to discover that? How to discover that? Because you'll say, from my experience, I am always changing. I am always changing. That's what we would say. I'm always changing. I never know what I'm going to be like in the next moment. I'm continually changing. My body is always changing. I'm always changing. That's how we feel, because we're experiencing an identity between me and my mind, or me and my body. There's no viveka. There's no discrimination there to recognize that, yes, my mind is always changing. My emotions are always changing. My sense organs are always changing. My body is always changing. My experiences are always changing. That is true. But I am the one who is present to all of those changes. So this is the one I need to recognize. On every level of experience, everything, every objectifiable experience, I am present to that. And I am present to those experiences coming into being and going out of being. So then he says, my nature is ajaha. I don't come into being. I am never born. I am nitya. So sometimes we make these two words, aja, not being born, and nitya as being eternal, never dying. So if we use the terms like this, he has three words, ajaha, nityaha, shashvataha. Ajaha means I don't come into being. I'm never a new experience for myself. I am ever present. And I never die. I'm nitya. I never die. I never go out of being. He says, I'm shashvataha, means between whenever I being here, so I've never been born, and I will not die, but while I'm here, I never change. You can say, well, okay, you've never been born, and you'll live forever, and you'll be changing for a long, long time along the way. Ever changing, birthless, but ever changing, forever, no death. No. Never been born, I never die, and I am shashvata, I am timeless in between. So timeless means, for me, there is no time. Then you could also be afraid, well, what if I'm never born, and I never die, but I'm going to get really old. The shashvata actually takes care of that. It means there's, for me, there's no time. But then the Krishna, just to bring, drive in the point, he says, I'm purana. Purana means putta. Even though I've been here forever, I am ever fresh, ever new. The naha is for never. I'm ancient, but ever fresh. For me, there is no growing old. There is no aging. And Swamiji would joke like this. He used to talk, even when he was young, he used to mimic getting old, like it'd be an old man, you know, like that. And then he'd say, you know, I used to stand like this, and then slowly I'm starting to curl as I get older and older and older. You know, because as you get old, you just kind of get decrepit, and maybe you can't stand up straight anymore. That's why it's good to do yoga. So you just become all hunched and bent over, and you go on forever and ever getting older and older and older. He said, no, you're puranaha. Puranaha means the being that you are is the being that you are, ever fresh. There's no aging, no change for you. So ajaha, I've never been, my being has never been born. Nityaha, it will never die. Shashvataha, I am always the presence of the present. There's no change for me. I am puranaha. I am ever fresh. So then he tells, for now, having said all this to Arjuna, then he says, in this atma, hanyate hanyamane sharire, when the body is killed. You know, because remember, Arjuna is so worried. Everyone's going to be killed. He's going to be killing everybody. You know. And people, all of the people on his side, on the other side, they're all going to be killed. You know, he says, so understanding yourself, when this body is killed, is being killed, hanyamane sharire, the atma, yourself, is never killed. You'll never be killed. Because you're not an object within the creation to be killed. It can't happen. Right? It can't happen.
What time is it?
12:30.
12:30?
Yeah.
Okay. Somehow I have trouble with that minute hand. Okay, so 12:30. Okay, we'll do the next verse, next class, okay?
Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo